to MTG Pro Tutor, the podcast that gathers high-level tactics by talking to your favorite Pro Tour Magic players. Whether you're just beyond starter decks or a hardcore grinder, we'll draw strategies you can use today to build stronger decks with killer results. Play like a pro here at MTG Pro Tutor. Now welcome the man with an unbeatable force of will, your thought courier and demonic tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome back, Pro Tutor Prodigies. I'm super excited to finish up the interview with Dan Jordan today. He has some amazing tips that he's going to share, and I really hope that you learn from them. Also, I'm super jazzed that the next few weeks are going to have so many incredible guests. The Pro Tour is over. I reached out to a lot of the players, and several of them have said that they wanted to come on. And so we're going to be having interviews of some of the best players in the world, sharing their history, their insights, and tips and tricks with you. So stay tuned and buckle up. So Dan, let's have a discussion about the lifetime of a set and get your insights on the various stages. So first comes the spoiler season. Everybody starts clamoring about what cards are good and which formats and getting all pumped up. What do you do during spoiler season? Are you actively looking and seeing what cards are coming out, or are you just kind of like, eh, whatever?
I used to like look at it every day, see what got released. Now I usually wait until the full spoiler is released, then I go look at it. But I think because this next Pro Tour just means a lot to me, I really want to do well. I'm going to be more avid to be like, every time a card comes out, looking at it and just really getting to know the format and try to get the biggest head start on it.
Sure. So how do you evaluate cards? What are you looking for? What tips can you share with others about that? So, you know, when you're looking at a card that hasn't even come out yet, what's going through your head?
Just looking at it and seeing, like, if I could see this card being good in standard. I mean, truth be told, I'm one of the worst evaluators when it comes to this. I thought, like, Jace the Mind Sculptor was not going to be a good card. And I was so far off left field. You know, like, I thought, like, Cryptic Command was another card back in lore. I'm like, oh, another terrible card. How can anyone ever play these cards? Meanwhile, they've become monster staples, one of which they got banned in standard, which when you something like that happens, it's, you know, you make a huge mistake. Cards that get banned in standard were incredible. And I thought they both were unplayable. So I'm usually a very bad evaluator. So I usually kind of just go with what the rest of the world is thinking about those cards.
All right. So now that we've evaluated the cards and we have a pretty good idea what's good and what's not, or maybe we're waiting, but we won't really know until we play with the cards. And for many people, the first time they play a new set is in a limited format. It's at a sealed pre-release followed by a slew of booster drafts. And sealed is generally considered to be a slower, more bomb-centric format. So what makes a good pool and what makes a card a build-around card versus a support card? What are you looking at when you have a sealed pool?
Typically, you just need cards that are going to impact the board really well. Like, you know, typically, you're going to need a few rares. Like, there's no denying that, you know. If you have a sealed deck and you have zero rares, you're probably not going to do very well. It's very unlikely. So what I'm looking for is I need something that's going to, like, finish the game. You know, my last sealed deck in Dallas, I had a Serendib Djinn, which is the 3/2 blue 4/3 flyer. Whenever you play a non-creature spell, you get +1/+1 to your team until end of turn, which is a great card. It can turn all those mediocre creatures into a very big threat by playing a super mediocre spell after that card's in play. So definitely need stuff like that. I definitely want a great curve. You know, curve is very important, especially in the format currently right now. And it's so, so, so important to have 2 drops and 3 drops and just really curve out well, and you can create very big problems for your opponent. Basically, in a sealed, I'm just hoping to have a great way to finish the game, or just whatever my plan is, you know, with that deck. Whether it's I want to curve out and beat him as quick as possible, I just want to be a control deck and let the game go long, you know, who knows, and go from there. And, like, my last sealed, my plan was just to have a super aggressive deck, 2 drops, 3 drops, 4 drops, then, you know, Serendib Djinn, and win the game very quickly. And that's what I did.
Cool. So drafting is considered to be skill-intensive and is one of the most popular formats. There are several aspects of draft that I'd love to have you weigh in on. So first, do you try to remember everything you pass or just the key cards?
It's going to be tough to remember everything you pass. I mean, you know, I'm not Rain Man. You really just gotta, like, remember. I mean, just keep a clear mind. Like, what are you putting the person to your left into? And if you say you take a red card first, and now the next like three or four picks, there's really no red cards. Like, it's probably getting pretty gummed up, and you're not going to be able to go to that color, and maybe need to, you know, abandon ship. And it's just so important to keep an open mind of the signals that are going to pass to you and what signals you're passing to someone else. And also try to think, maybe you don't need to take a certain card because there's another card in one of the early packs that's going to wield you. So also keep in mind how many playables are in some of the early packs so you can know whether something's going to wield you or not. And then also, when you get to the day twos of Grand Prix and Pro Tours, you're not allowed to look back at your picks. Right. So you need to, like, after like a pack or two, when you're going into like pack two or pack three, you need to be really, really, really keep in mind that how many creatures you have, how many spells you have, so you don't end up with like a deck that's got no spells or no creatures. And then also, maybe you need to put value something highly, like you really need two drops. You get past a card that in a vacuum is much better than a two drop, but you desperately need a two drop or something. Or you need a spell really badly over a creature that normally you would always take, but you need to take that spell. You know, something you need to always be mindful of. You don't need an incredible memory, but you need to be very mindful and have a reasonable memory when you're in the middle of drafting and stuff.
Awesome. So when do you decide what colors you're going to be in while drafting? Are you one of those, I'm open for the whole pack or several picks?
I mean, some formats I do have a preference. This format in particular, I like to be very aggressive. I ideally like to be white-red, if anything.
Do you force it? Do you make white-red happen?
So I was actually saying how I would take certain white uncommons over, like, the blue uncommon that makes two flyers, Whirler Rogue, which that card's, like, insane. But I just want to be white so bad that I'm willing to take a card that's worse to force myself into white. And that's not something I typically advise people to do, because ideally what you want to do is you open your pack, you take the best card.
Right.
You know, and then you try to get into that color. But if things are getting cut off, you need to be very mindful of, wow, this card got shipped, but there's a rare missing. This card got shipped, but there's some commons missing. Think about what they're taking over those cards. What commons or uncommons or rares they're taking over certain of these cards. And that can lead you into, you know, getting into a different color if you have to, or staying with, you know, the card you picked. So definitely within, like, by, like, around pick five, you need to have a very good idea of what color or colors you should be in.
Okay. Excellent. And then, how do you decide to switch colors? Just when you're not receiving, you know, your first pick color or something like that, you're like, all right, time to move on?
Yeah, I mean, once you get to there, you need to have, like, you need to know for sure one of your colors. You have to know one of them. Now, sometimes it's cool to take cards that are worse to stay on color to get a better, because you're going to have, the more the draft goes, the better idea you're going to get of what color you should be.
Right.
Yeah. But you don't want to figure out too late, otherwise, you know, you're going to have a very unplayable deck.
Right.
So the earlier you know, naturally, the better your deck will be. So I'd say around, you know, pick five, you need to have a very clear idea of being one color. And you can be one color going into pack two, but once you're in pack two, you need to really figure out that second color quick, fast, and in a hurry.
Right. And then just focus on those for pack three.
Right, and just focus on those two colors and, you know.
And be mindful of what else is going around so you don't get blown out by an Aether Spouts or something.
Right, exactly.
Cool. So we understand that reading the draft is noting the signal sent to you, being mindful of the signals you're sending. But let's get into your mind here and have you really help us understand what it means to read the draft. So everyone wants to read the draft better. What are you looking for and how do you read it?
It really just depends on... I mean, sometimes you're going to get screwed. You know, sometimes, for example, at the GP, I took a red rare and passed the red uncommon that X and 2 red deals damage. So there's things like that can happen where you happen to take a red card that just happens to be better than another really good red card, and you would naturally think the person to your left is going to go right into red because, why, you know, you're passing a very good red card.
Right.
That's something that is rare, but other than that, just keeping in mind what people would take over, like, how good does this card have to be for someone to pass a good uncommon or a good rare or a good common to know that you should be in that color or not, you know?
Got it.
Like, if someone passes me a pretty decent rare and an uncommon is missing in this format, I'm going to assume that they took, like, Whirler Rogue or maybe one of the white uncommons. which is the 4-6 that taps a guy in their upkeep, or like the 2-mana 2/1 that Renown with first strike. You know, like if that's the case, then I need to be very mindful that I need to stay out of those colors.
Good point.
Until I get a better idea of which one they took, and then I can stay out of that color. Because otherwise, you know, sure, I might have a reasonable pack too, but my deck's not going to be very good because he's getting, you know, first pick of all the good white cards or blue cards.
Right.
So that's a very normal situation to happen.
Okay, to boil it down, understanding the set, being familiar with what's out there, and then looking at the pack, and in this particular case, you can be like, whoa, an uncommon is missing over this rare here, and thinking, wow, which uncommons would I pick or are better than this rare, and just kind of being mindful of that. That's a really good way to go about it. Excellent.
Exactly. Just need to have some familiarity with the set.
Absolutely. All right, so this is some really good stuff, some advanced level stuff, I feel. So to bring it down to the beginner, what's the one thing that someone sitting down for their first draft ever should focus on?
Sitting down for their first draft ever?
Yeah, a real basic beginner drafting tip.
Are you saying if they're at, like, the professional circuit?
No. They're new to Magic-ish, and they're, you know, they're sitting down for a draft. You know, they listen to us talk about some of this higher-level stuff, and they might go, whoa, you know, I'm not there yet. I'm just drafting for the first time. What should I be focused on?
Just the basics. You know, 40-card deck, 23 spells, 17 lands. You want to have anywhere from, you know, ideally 14 to 17 creatures, you know, 6 to 8 spells, somewhere in that range. And just have a really good curve, you know. You don't want to be too top heavy, or you don't want to be too, you know, like have too many cheap creatures. Just really, you know, keep in mind how you want your deck to look.
Right.
And, you know, ideally be 2 colors, have good mana, and basically make it so your deck can always have the best draws possible by, you know, having your deck have a very good curve with very good mana, with great spells and good creatures.
I definitely second that. I think the curve has been brought up before by other guests as well. Focusing on that, especially for beginners, like you were saying earlier, being mindful, hey, this 4 or 5 drop might be, in a vacuum, much better than this 2 drop over here, but you need to be mindful of what you're drafting throughout to say, hey, I already have 3, 4, 4 or 5 drops, and so I need more 2 drops and things like that. I think that's probably one of the big things that beginners get stuck on, is going for really powerful cards and then dying with all these powerful cards in their hands because they couldn't cast them.
Exactly.
So we know, like you mentioned, 17 lands is usually the right number. Do you have any suggestions for calculating the right ratio in a regular, like, 2-color deck?
I usually just count the symbols, you know. So, like, say you have, basically, for math's sake, you have, you know, 10 white cards. They'll have one white symbol, meaning, you know, they're, like, 2 and a white, 3 and a white to cast, something like that. And you've got 10 blue cards. And, you know, 5 of them have 2 blue symbols, so like 2 and 2 blue or something, and 5 have single blue, so you got 10 white symbols and, you know, 15 blue symbols. You know, you want to make your mana like 8 planes, 9 islands or something. Usually, it's just to get a good feel for stuff like that. Now, there are certain circumstances that come up where you might want to have, even though there's more symbols, you might want to have more of one way because you need double of a certain color on turn 2. Or, you know, and you have multiple cards like that. But for the most part, that's how you want to do it. Just count the symbols and usually go 8, 9 in favor of whichever one has more symbols.
Okay, cool. All right, so the pre-release is over. We've drafted the set a bit. And in my experience, players get their feet under them at their local game store by playing varying formats. But eventually, they want to see what the big tournaments are like. And they eventually make their way to a GP or PPTQ. So what's the best way to prepare for these events? What do you do to prepare for these events?
You just get a friend, play a few hours a couple times a week, and test against decks that you think you are going to be a good portion of the format. And that's basically what they do to test for the Pro Tour, except they just do that times, you know, 10 or 20. They just work really, right, really hard. They put in tons of hours, you know. So, and that way, you'll be able to, you know, learn what you need to fix about your deck in order to beat certain matchups and thus end up maybe, you know, winning a PPTQ and getting to the professional circuit.
So, in gearing up for these big events, I've heard a lot about teams and how important they are and things like that. Do you have a team?
Yeah, we recently used to be called Day One MTG. Now it's Team Target, and it's basically like Ben Freeman, Christian Calcano, Marco Camaluzzi, Andrea Mengucci. You know, there's been other people that have been on the team, people that have been off over time. But those are like, you know, the guys that were like constantly on it, always on it. You know, this pro throw, there's tons of other guys that are playing in it and doing well. But that's the normal people on it. But that's my team, yes.
Awesome. How crucial, in your opinion, is it to have a team?
It's extremely crucial. If you're qualified for a pro tour and you don't have a team, which I've had before, it's just like you're going to have such outdated information because you're going to have to go off everything Moto that's on Magic Online, which everyone already has, and they're already adjusting to that. And you're just going to have to go talk to people that aren't keyed for the pro tour, because when you're qualified for the pro tour, everything's hush-hush. No one's telling you anything except the team. You know, it's not like you walk up to, you know, Luis Scott Vargas and go, so what are you guys playing for the GP? Or what are you guys playing for the Pro Tour? And get him to just answer me, like, yeah, here's our 75. You know, you need to, like, work very hard. And the team is very important because all people that have the same goal, they're very, you know, they're driven to win this tournament. So now they're going to work very hard with you. And you're going to get really good information.
Right. Right. Awesome. So what suggestions do you have for building a team? Like, what should people be looking for when they're putting together, you know, a group of players that they want to go to the next level with?
Honestly, you just need to network yourself. You know, you need to get out there. And unfortunately, it's tough to get on teams. It is not easy at all. You need to be a good player, and there needs to be room, and you know, you got to be something that they want.
Right.
And you know, sure, you can get on a team sometimes, but it might not be a very good team. But you need to get on a team with some pro tour players, you know, and just work with them. Because even if it's not your ideal group, I mean, granted, you know, our team's pretty solid, but we don't have, you know, we're not the Pantheon, you know, we don't have talent like that. But, you know, it's still important for us to be on a team like that because we have people that are going to work hard and have some breakout performances at pro tours.
And then, wrapping up this playtesting session, what tips do you have for playtesting? What's the best way to go about it?
Just find out what the problems are with certain decks or what you need to fix. And don't just play like 5 or 10 games. Like, for you to really understand the problems of certain decks and things like that, you really need to put in a ton of games. I mean, to really get a good idea. And even if it's just repetition, you're still learning things. It's getting basically trying to fire off as many games as you can of things you need to find out, and just firing off and trying new things, and you know, not always doing the same thing, because then you do the same thing, boop, all this time's gone. Oh, hey, here's the Pro Tour. You know, maybe you didn't find out that much.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's very important, I can tell. I mean, I've never been up to that level, but that playtesting and taking good notes and really trying to understand what's going on, for sure. All right, so to bring things back down to the beginner level, what would you suggest to people who have a limited budget and they can't afford to draft every day online or construct the most popular, you know, deck in a given format? What can those entry level players do to improve and really kind of get rolling in this Magic scene?
Maybe play like standard and then just play like local tournaments that are like, you know, maybe $2 or $5. Stick with your deck and try to keep improving, and then, you know, keep playing, get better, and then, you know, next thing you know, you win some tournaments, you get some prizes, you know, and you begin to create a name for yourself, and you can start spending that money to go on other cards, play other tournaments and stuff.
Right. Yeah, just kind of grind it out.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, you can, some other good suggestions, I think, are, you know, drafts, and then those give you standard cards that you can either use or, you know, trade or sell or things like that, and like you said, just kind of build your pool and improve and move on up. So, cool. Right on. So, do you have a Magic-related resource that you would like to share with our listeners?
Actually, normally, I wouldn't probably have a very good answer to this, but my friend Brian actually just texted me before this Pro Tour something Zvi created called Elephanting, and he wrote an entire article on it, and it's very hard to explain. I would not even be able to explain. I read the article and literally had Brian, and I was like, I don't even know what I just read. I need you to explain this to me. I'm too dumb. And it's just something, if you go read the article, it's like amazing that someone even thought of that. And he's someone I would just put in a high respect for you to make your game better. And, you know, Zvi has an outstanding resume.
All right, we'll link to that in the show notes. You said it was elephanting?
Yeah, it's called elephanting.
All right, I'm sure that'll be pretty easy to find. I'll look it up for sure. All right, Dan, so as we start to wrap things up, we're all dying to know what your plans are for the future. So what events are you planning on attending?
I wasn't going to go to Detroit, but after this recent finish, I kind of have the fire back, and I'm trying to go to Detroit, but even though it's slowly approaching, so my friends aren't letting me know if they want a team or not, as, you know, my plane ticket gets more expensive by the day.
Oh, yeah.
So I would like to go to Detroit, and I'm obviously going to the Pro Tour, but I don't know if there's too much in between that. I don't think I'm going to the Stars of the Invitational. Ideally, I'd like to go to Detroit, then the Pro Tour, and then I'm moving to Vegas in late October, and I was thinking about going to GP Seattle in November.
And then which Pro Tour are you gearing up for?
Pro Tour Milwaukee,
which is
mid-October.
Mid-October. All right, sweet. Well, finally, what's the best way that we can connect with you, and what's one parting piece of guidance that you can leave with our listeners that they can use the next time they sit down?
I see this happen a lot, and which is basically just watching people think they're better than they are, and they just let their head get too big, and really just keep a level head and realize there's always someone better than you, and you need to constantly be improving your game, you know, as with any free time you possibly have. And not really just get too frustrated over, like, losing or, you know, stuff like that. And just, you know, try to be, like, a role model for the game. You know, basically just be, like, Reed Duke, you know. Just be a very good player, very nice, very courteous, and always be willing to get better and, you know, not scared to admit that you might be wrong about something. Because, you know, and there's always someone better than you. And there's always ideas that people might think of. So just, you know, and just don't, you know, write off anything in that sense. So just be open-minded and keep playing and try to just do your best and play a bunch of tournaments and have fun.
Awesome. And what's the best way to connect with you?
Connecting with me probably be through social media. You know, I'll see anything on the phone, probably just Twitter. It's at Dan Jordan MTG or Facebook. You know, just message me on Facebook.
Great. Sweet. Well, thank you so much, Dan, for your time and for sharing your expertise. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed, always draw what you need, and depart every plane victorious.
Thanks.
All right. Wow. There you have it. Some of the fantastic tips from Dan Jordan. Thank you so much for coming on. It was a blast having him, and I'm really looking forward to putting into practice some of the things that he shared with us. Also, GP San Diego was last weekend. I ran a Abzan Elves deck, and I'll let you know how that went. Just stay tuned, and in some of the future weeks, I will share my results. So there you have it. I'm not sharing them now because as of this recording, I haven't gone yet, so that's just modern technology, I guess. A little bit of time travel going on. You're hearing me in the future. Or maybe I'm recording this in the past. I don't know. Anyways, but I hope you guys have a fantastic week. Stay tuned because we have some great Pro Tour guests coming up for the next several weeks. I'm Sean Penrod, and we'll see you in the next cast.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of MTG Pro Tutor. To get more of the top deck building tips and tricks, head over to mtgprotutor.com and join the mailing list. Make sure you let us know which of your favorite Pro Tour players you'd like to hear on the show so we can help you play like a pro. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on MTG Pro Tutor.